I'm going to show a little video real quick. It has a little bit of music in it, but, you know, it's not a big deal. So check it out. And it's about being thankful. So here we go. Hopefully it works. This morning we're going to talk a little bit about being thankful because, you know, what's that holiday coming up? Is it Christmas? Some of you are skipping Thanksgiving, and that's just sacrilegious. You can't do that. You have to be thankful. You just have to. And we're actually going to talk about how you have to be thankful this morning. So as we get to that, thanks living, making gratitude a lifestyle. That's been our idea for this month, the idea of living out your thankfulness, being really, truly thankful. And I feel so far away when I stand up here. That's why I like to stand down there. But I'm going to be up here for a little bit. So anyways, rejoice with those who rejoice. You know what the next part is, right? Mourn with those who mourn. And here's the hard part about this verse. It's wrapped up in Romans chapter 12. It has love all about it. And at the beginning of this little passage that this is a part of, it challenges you to be willing to suffer. And how many people like to suffer? Anybody? No, okay, I was just checking. Some people are a little strange and they're like, yeah, count me in, let's suffer. But the idea here is that we should be open and willing and available because we're loving. Because God calls us to love. And love means it's not about me. Because when I truly love another, I become a servant. You remember that passage that says, submit to one another out of fear or reverence or respect for Christ. And that's a mutual submission. And I like to challenge people when we talk about these kinds of ideas, when you submit to one another, who wins? Everybody, but bigger than that, if I'm submitting to you, you're submitting to me, we're submitting, everybody's submitting. Actually, Christ wins. Overwhelmingly, Christ wins, and then we win. But what happens when we go on some kind of a power trip, and it's about me, 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 I want what I want, you better do what I like, and if you don't do what I like, then I'm leaving. Nobody wins. There's suffering, there's heartache, and it's not good suffering, it's bad suffering. It's annoying, it's frustrating, it's painful, it's unhealthy, it's unkind. It's not of God. So when we are kind, and we submit to one another, and we love one another, then we can rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. And today we're going to talk about this from the Old Testament perspective of being thankful, because there's this one time when they're supposed to be thankful and they're called to be thankful for like 7 days. And we read that just a bit ago, but if you missed it, we'll read it again, don't worry. But before we get to that, I want to ask you, back up 2 slides, when you're happy, how happy are you? Are you happy like a little kid on Christmas? I remember the first time my children could really experience Christmas. Like, you know, when they were really young, my wife was all about buying them presents. I'm like, honey, a year old, don't think that's necessary. The boxers are more. But we've always had this joke, right? We all have this joke. When your kids are little and you buy them these things and they're like, oh, just give me the box. And they're playing with the box. And they're happy. But then that Christmas comes where they understand what gifts are. And they understand that the box is not the gift. They might still play with it later, but they're really focused on the toys and the fun and the food and the family and everybody getting together. And they're like, ah! Are you happy like that when you're happy? I mean, do you come down the stairs in the morning or out your bedroom going, it's another day! It's awesome! Wouldn't that be amazing if we were happy like children? I mean, that's where we should live, in that kind of emotion. But here's the other. When you mourn, when you are in sorrow, when you are sad, do you wail? Do you weep? Do you cry out? Oh, God, why? Like, do you get expressive? Now, in my family, I'm German, Irish, English, and the Irish doesn't mean very much in our family. It's minor. German and English are overwhelming. And this idea of stoicism, like, you must be reserved and proper, and Andrew, your shirt's not tucked in. What are you doing? You're preaching in plaid. That's unacceptable. Like, that feeling was about our family. Very proper. I remember when in my first gig as a preacher, I had to wear a tie because my mother drilled it into me that if I didn't, I was sinning and I would be immoral. Like, it would just be like a sin and like overwhelming, and I would, I'd probably end up in hell. But my mom doesn't really believe that, but that was the culture we grew up in. And so as I grew and matured, I realized, no, that's not the more important thing, but that idea of the mourning, the idea of the sorrow, the idea of the recognition of my emotions was a huge growth point for me. And I would say, if you're struggling with emotions in terms of, you have maybe three, happy, sad, angry. If those are the extent of your emotions, some people, that's all they have. And like, anger is, wah! And happy is like, hey! And sad's like, okay, let's move on. If that's you, I want to encourage you to name your emotions. Start to name them. And when you feel angry, don't just say angry. Say why you're angry. Think about that anger. And name it frustration, maybe. Name it tension. Name it heartache. Name it loss. And work through that and think about it, because emotions are extremely important. And if you're not naming them, it's going to be very difficult for you to have more than three or maybe even five. But if you start to name them and own them and recognize them, and don't label them bad. That's one of the sad things that we do in America. Oh, you're sad? Oh, don't be sad. That's bad. Oh, don't cry. I remember as a younger preacher, and not too long ago, because some of you, I'm like a child. But but as a younger preacher, I would apologize if I started to cry in a sermon because I felt like somehow I was just doing something wrong. But then I realized, no, that's our default in America. If I start to be emotional in a negative way, I should apologize because I'm bringing you down, I'm causing you problems. But our emotions are a natural part of who we are, and there is nothing wrong with them. They are not bad or good. They might feel positive and they might feel negative, but I don't want to label them as good and evil, because that's what that does. And anytime you start to feel sad, you want to either medicate it or get rid of it or deal with it in some other way of, let's all be happy now. But what you've done is you short-circuited your ability to heal. You short-circuited your ability to recognize that you're a full human. And like, as a nation, we'll get to this in a bit, think about our holidays and what we celebrate and how we celebrate as we look at the Jewish holidays. So be thankful. That's this morning's sermon. And it's a command. Be thankful. God commands you to be thankful. You might not like that, but it's a command. A festival of booths, we read this already, so we're going to talk about it a little bit. You must observe the festival of shelters, booths, or as was read from the NIV, tabernacle, for 7 days at the end of the harvest season, after the grain has been threshed and the grapes have been pressed. Now, what comes from grain and grapes? Communion, right? We got wine, we got bread. But here's the other. What was that a part of? It wasn't just a table that was all special and was sitting up here and you only get a little cracker and a tiny little, just when we were small, it was how little could you take because you couldn't take too much. But this was a part of a meal where you ate and you celebrated. And the strange thing is, back at the Cane Ridge revivals, back in the early 1800s, when the Churches of Christ were taken off, the reason they got together was to celebrate this, But they did it as a full-on meal, everybody. I mean, they had wine, and they had bread, and that was the meal. And they set a table, and it was long. And they had thousands of people coming, and you had to reserve a spot at the table because they couldn't prepare it for that many. But you got to be a part of that. And the odd thing was, back in that time, that if you were Baptist, you could not take communion with a Methodist, and if you were Presbyterian, no, those were out. You had to take them with your own tribe. You couldn't take it with anybody else ever because they weren't really Christians. But I think today we've seen past that, and we recognize that this is a part of a meal, and it's a meal put on by Christ. It's a meal that when I come to this table, it's not me or Charles who is up here who's the host. It's Jesus. And he says, this is my table, and all are welcome who claim me. And I think that generosity of spirit is overwhelming and wonderful, and it comes actually from back here in Deuteronomy and Leviticus, as we see. Because this festival will be a happy time of celebrating with your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levites, the foreigners, the orphans, and the widows, and from your towns. So I think we've got, let's see here, sons and daughters, which means moms and dads are going to be there because that's who this is written to, right? And you've got your male and female servants. That's everybody that's like lower class, right? And then, well, the Levites, they're not really the priests, but we'll include them. And foreigners. No, foreigners too? Yeah, orphans and widows who are not usually included, but here they must be included. This is saying this is a celebration for everybody. You can't leave a single person out. All the people everywhere across the nation get together and party. How many times have you heard that at church? Get together and party. The difficulty is the parties have somehow become evil and wrong and bad because they're not about the right things. They're about me having what I want, doing what I want. But the festivals, which are the original parties, if I might say, are about more than that. For 7 days, you must celebrate. Celebrate for 7 days. This festival to honor the Lord your God, who at the place he chooses, for it is he who blesses you with bountiful harvest and gives you success in all your work. This festival will be a time of great joy for all. Wow. Well, what do you do if you don't feel like it? What do you do if you're sad? What do you do if you've recently lost a loved one? How do you get together with everybody else and party? How do you celebrate? How do you get excited? Because it's not about me. Yes, I've experienced this horrible thing in my life, but I'm here to serve you and to serve God. And in that, I can set aside my feelings for a little while. Not to say I'm going to ignore them and hide them, but to say, no, I've come to celebrate God and what he's done. And when I do that, I come excited and jubilant and overwhelming and just, this is God. You know, the Jewish people danced a lot. Did you watch Fiddler on the Roof? Have you seen Fiddler on the Roof? Anybody? Raise your hand. This is all, you can. I think your arms work. Some of you, you had shoulder surgery. Don't raise that one. Raise the other one. Okay. So you've seen that, right? Tevye, and he dances the whole way through that thing. And they have a wedding, and they all dance, and they party, and they celebrate, and it's fun, and it's good. Wow. That's not like my growing up. Stoic. Hold your emotions in. Don't tell anybody. Don't let anybody see you cry because a real man does not cry. And yet we're called to celebrate and be joyful and dance. And so I think about that and I think, I want that. I've been missing that. I've been aching for that. And so not too long ago, I've told you this story before maybe, but if you're new, and many of you are new, thank you for coming today. Wonderful to be with your families if that's why you're in town. If not, hey, great. Glad you're here. When I was a kid, hang on, now I forgot what I was going to say. Sometimes this happens. Okay, so walk that back, come back through. I don't know. We'll move on. I'll come back to it later. Oh, that's what it was. When I was a kid, I laughed a lot. I loved to laugh. It was a great thing to laugh. As I got older, I quit laughing as much because I was told, you know, when you're mature, you're serious, and you stifle your emotions a bit because you don't want anybody to think that you're too happy, too sad, too whatever. So there's the public presentation, and the presentation when you come to church and you say, I'm here to worship God. Hi, how are you? Nice to meet you. Yes, good to be here. I'm happy. You're happy. We're all happy. Everybody's happy. But then I started to realize, because I heard some research about children and their laughter and about us and adults, that being the rest of us who aren't children, and I started to realize that we don't laugh enough, because the average adult might laugh 2 to 3 times a day, whereas the average child, it's hundreds. I mean, they're up close to at least 100, and my kids, it's much more than that. And so I asked, why? Why don't we laugh? And it's because we say, oh, don't laugh. It's inappropriate. It's unkind. You're going to say or do something. You've got to hold on. Reserve. And I thought, no. I think I want to be happy. And I think laughing is a good way to do that. And so I'm going to start laughing again. When I find something funny, I'm going to laugh. And so my wife sometimes looks at me and goes, what is wrong with you? And I just thought of something. It was funny, so I laughed, you know. So anyway, so I want to encourage you to express your emotions. Happy, sad, joyful, morose, whatever it is. Express them, name them, recognize them, own them. Because here's the other. The Festival of Booths, oh, this is the long version. I want to deal with this for a moment. This one's great. The long version of the Festival of Booths is in Leviticus chapter 23, verse 33. It begins, the Lord said to Moses, say to the Israelites, on the 15th day of the seventh month, the Lord's Feast of Tabernacles begins, and it lasts for 7 days. The first day is a sacred assembly. Do no regular work. For 7 days, present offerings made to the Lord by fire, and on the 8th day, hold a sacred assembly and present an offering made to the Lord by fire. It is the closing assembly. Do no regular work. So do you see what happened there? 8 days a week. That's a Beatles song, and that's what God said. You're going to have 8 days in your week of celebration, so live it up, right? And here's the thing. When you think, well, they're going to offer this sacrifice, well, remember, if you're visiting, I've talked about this before, so I'm going to act like you already know it. Many of the sacrifices you ate. It was a time of celebration, because I love that this is a table, and it looks like a table, because we're supposed to eat with God. When Jesus is here saying, hey, come on and eat, everybody who calls on me, everybody who believes in me, come and eat together and celebrate this and live in unity and be together. That's not uniformity. That's unity. Uniformity is something else. It's for people who want to march and stuff. But for us, we're all different. We're all so very different. And we're called to this table. And we're called to eat that table and to celebrate together. And in the Old Testament, there was a table. It came after the altar. When this used to be one solid block of wood looking like thing, that's much more like an altar. It's much more like an altar. And when you come to that, you should weep and wail and mourn. But when you come to this table, you should celebrate, because you're eating with God. He has forgiven you. You've been washed clean. You are a new person again. It's phenomenal. So we're going to skip down to verse 39. It says, so beginning with the 15th day of the seventh month, after you have gathered the crops of the land, celebrate the festival of the Lord for 7 days. The first day is a day of rest, and the 8th day is also a day of rest. On the first day, you are to take choice fruit from the trees and palm fronds, leafy branches and poplars, and rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. I don't know about you, but palm fronds reminds me of Jesus entering. And you know, in John, the Gospel of John, we'll get to this, there's a whole bunch of times when Jesus is just hitting the festival, and his announcement is so tied into the Jewish festival, because you remember, Jesus was a Jew. Yes, good job. And so he is still a Jew, in case you're wondering. Didn't change. He died, he resurrected, and I mean, oh, look, it's Jesus. They didn't go, oh, look, he turned white. That didn't happen. So, 41, celebrate. This is a festival of the Lord for 7 days each year. This is to be a lasting ordinance for the generations to come. Celebrate it in the seventh month. Live in booths for 7 days. All native-born Israelites are to live in booths, so your descendants will know that I had the Israelites live in booths when I brought them out of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So Moses announced it to the Israelites, the appointed feast of the Lord. Now, I don't know about you, but partying and having fun doesn't sound like living in a booth or a tabernacle or a makeshift tent, sheltery thing. Now, here's the thing. The palm fronds and all that stuff, I read up on this, just so you know. I'm not making this up. There's stuff. It's historical. It's over there in my office in a, with books. And they had to, in some way, make sure they could see the stars through their little shelter. So they weren't allowed to make a full-on roof that kept everything off of them. But in modern times, if it rains, they're allowed to go inside, just so you know. But historically, no. Historically, they were supposed to be out there for 7 days reminding themselves of what it was like to go through the desert, going out of Egypt. And what happened in that desert? Do you remember? There was a rock, and Moses spoke to it, and water came out of it. And do you remember how they went around through the desert? They were led by a cloud of fire at night and by a pillar of smoke or cloud during the day. Isn't that amazing? And they followed that everywhere they went. And so when they're building their tabernacle, their booth, their shelter, they're being reminded of how they were led by God through the wilderness. They're being reminded of how they were coming out of slavery and into freedom. And they're being challenged to live free again. So as we look at that, let's go on to the next one. Now, this is the Day of Atonement. Now, this is where the slides aren't pretty, nothing's fancy. Because on the Day of Atonement, the call is to mourn. It is a national day of mourning for our sin. It is a national day to say, I am a sinner. Woe is me. And if you remember this, this comes in Leviticus 16, 29 through 31 is the part we'll read. But before we read that, there's a part just before it. It says, there's two goats that show up in this. One is the sacrificial goat and one is the scapegoat. But when you bring them, you don't know which one's which. You have to cast lots. You have to like flip a coin and decide which, this one's head, this one's tails, and okay, this one is getting sacrificed today. Every year, you don't know which one is going to be sacrificed, which one's going to stay. But on this day, the 10th day of the appointed month in early autumn, you must deny yourselves. What does it mean to deny yourself? Neither native-born Israelites nor foreigners living among you may do any kind of work. This is a permanent law for you. Well, earlier it says that you can't do anything. And the culture traditionally has a multiple list of things, and I'm just going to deal with a few. No eating, no marital relationships, no work, which was already said, and basically no fun. The goal of this day is to recognize how sinful you are. And those two goats, the one gets sacrificed, and its blood is sprinkled everywhere, and the other one shall become the scapegoat. He is to lay both hands on the head of that live goat, confess over it all the wickedness and rebellion of the Israelites, all their sins, and put them on the goat's head. He shall send the goat away into the desert in the care of a man appointed for the task. The goat will carry on itself all their sins to a solitary place, and the man shall release it in the desert. That's the scapegoat. So think about that. There's a command to celebrate, and there's a command to mourn. On that day, the offerings of purification will be made for you, and you will be purified in the Lord's presence from all your sins. It will be a Sabbath day of complete rest for you, and you must deny yourselves. This is a permanent law for you. What are we lacking in our nation because we do not have truly a national day of mourning for our sin? We have a mourning for fallen soldiers. We turn it into a party and we celebrate. We have any other days of mourning? I don't know of any. So I want to encourage you to find a day sometime in the year, a Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, that's the same thing. That would be a good day. It just happened, but we can celebrate it again. I think it's wise to recognize our sins as a nation, as a church, as individuals. Some of us recognize them all day long and we can't ever release them. But what would it be like if we had a goat and we just said, this one, all the sins go on it. And we let it off. We sent it away. But isn't Jesus our scapegoat? Haven't all of our sins been put on him? And so when we come to the table every Sunday, we have turned this into that scapegoat ceremony. But this is a ceremony of celebration. This is a ceremony of rejoicing. So I think in some sense, yeah, you might want to contemplate that, but not for too long. Because we're called to rejoice, to party, to celebrate, to be happy. So Jesus at the Festival of Booths. And this goes back to our first festival, the tabernacles, booths, shelters, whatever. And in John 7:37, it says this, on the last and greatest day of the festival, Jesus stood and said in a loud voice, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink, and rivers of water will flow out of them." What's that sound like? The rock in the desert, right? Rivers of flowing life will flow out of him. And later on, Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." What's that sound like? The light that guides us through the desert. You remember, Paul said in like 1 Corinthians 11 or something like that, that I think it might have been 10. Anyways, 1 Corinthians. He says, you also went through the desert. You see, we are Jews, abnormally born, grafted in. We are also called to remember these things that we experienced, that we went through the desert. And we lived in booths, and we celebrate that festival for 8 days a week. We remember that this is our God who set us free, who gave us water, and who gave us light. And also, we are reminded that we now embody that very same thing, that we are water to the world, and we are light for men to see, for women to see, for children to see, for grandmas and grandpas to see. People need to see Jesus in us, coming through us. We are called for this, to provide sustenance for others. So, faith challenges. This is where I remind you again that these are my understandings as I've read some other people and preachers and fabulous people who are smarter than me. But this is my packaging of it. If you like it, great. If you don't, that's okay. Just hold on to it for a little while, maybe a week if you can. Try to remember it. Hold it in tension with whatever else you've believed about all these things and say to yourself, God, which one, well, say to God, it's better if you say not just to yourself but to God, which one should I have? Or maybe I need both, and either is okay. Or God, which one, maybe I should just drop, Andrew's not so, he didn't do that. No, that's okay. I won't be offended. My job is to share with you my perspective. Your job is to hold on to it for a little while and work through it. So faith challenges here are where I say, hey, maybe these things are appropriate for you. If not, pray to God and ask him for better ones because he'll provide. So rejoice. That's so easy, isn't it? It's not. Sometimes it's really hard to rejoice. In fact, the beginning of last week, I was very sad. I was not feeling good. I was very down. And I thought, what an appropriate thing to have to preach this sermon when I might be stuck in a rut of just, I'm not doing well. I'm not feeling well. I'm not up. But actually, I asked the elders to pray for me, and I felt better. I don't know if it was them or God or all kinds of things or my wife and kids, but there was a whole bunch of stuff that came together, and I feel better. But sometimes I come on a Sunday morning, and I'm thinking, I don't really want to do this. I don't really want to be here. I'm not in any shape to preach or do anything. And I think, no. One, it's my job. I get paid for it. And that's one part of it. But more than that, it's a part of who I am. It's who I am is to come and to encourage and to celebrate and to help people think new thoughts. And I get excited by it. I don't know if you can tell that or not. But rejoicing, when it comes time for me to preach, my brain switches over into new gear, and I am a happy man most of the time, and I'm excited to preach, and especially being here with you all. And earlier, these guys were up here saying all this stuff about, you know, we have the best church, la, 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 la. I'm new. I've only been here about 4 months. I'm not one of them exactly yet. I mean, some of them might claim me, but others are going, well, we don't know yet. We're watching. So I can tell you from an outsider's perspective that this is a great church. There are people here who will love you, accept you, welcome you in, encourage you, and just work with you to be a better person. And I am honestly wonderfully thankful to be here to preach, to share, to work among you, to be a part of you, to hopefully one day be accepted by you, no longer be the new guy, but you know, I don't know how long that takes. So anyways, I want you to rejoice. When you're having, as you want to call them, label them, I don't know, great experiences, have them more. Really laugh. Really let yourself enjoy good times. And the other one is mourn. When you're down, go ahead and just drink in the bitterness. Do you know that like two-thirds of the Psalms are sorrow, lament? They are painful. If you don't know emotions very well, read the Psalms. Oh my. There is so much emotion in the Psalms. Read them. Experience them. Try to live them. Try to put yourself into the psalmist's life. And last, be thankful. 8 days a week, be thankful. Always be thankful. Even when you're sad and going through it and life is hard, start naming things to be thankful for. Say, God, thank you that something's going to come out of this. I'm going to come out of this and I'm going to be in a better place and I long for that. That's what David did. Even in most all of his lament psalms, there's a few where in those psalms, they were just like, man, life stinks and it's not getting better. The end. But the majority of the psalms all turn towards the end and say, God, I know one day I will turn back to you. One day I will feel good again. One day I'll be raised up and I will encourage others. I will train others to worship you. And I think that's what we're called to do. I think we're called to rise up and encourage others to worship God. And we need to do that by knowing our own emotions and not apologizing for them, recognizing who we are, apologizing for how we might act on our emotions when we're angry and lashing out at people, but also if we're too over the top happy and we make jokes at other people's expense, we should probably apologize for that. But the emotion itself is not bad. The emotion is good. The question is, are you a fully functioning human being with a full range of emotions, ready and willing to rejoice with those who are happy today, and also to weep and wail with those who are in sorrow? That's what we're called to do. We're called to be able to experience both on the same day, because we have a church of all these people who have lost loved ones, who are going through it. But we also have people that are experiencing new life and new babies and new people coming in and their family coming back. And it's Thanksgiving. So as you go through your Thanksgiving, I want to encourage you to allow your emotions to go, but to apologize when you overstep your reactions. To encourage your emotions and to encourage the emotions around you and to not hold back the tears or the happiness, but to live it up, to have a good time. To be thankful. God, thank you for all these things. That's where we should live, in thanks living this Thanksgiving. So we like to say this prayer at the end because it reminds us that Jesus is in charge. It's his kingdom, not ours. And it's about what he gives, not what we take. So let's pray as he has taught us to. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done.